Call to order the House Committee on Rules for Wednesday, March 13, 2013. Our first bill will be House Bill 2988. I'll open a public hearing. House Bill 2988. Representative Jensen, do you want to say anything about the bill? Would you like to speak to the bill, 2988?
The other states apparently are doing just fine on the other
side. I'll be happy to. I don't have the bill right. Didn't call
the nutcase of the world
in front of me, but House Bill 2988 provides that when a person turns 16 years of age and goes into obtain a driver's license, they will be offered the opportunity to register to vote. The registration they can currently do this at age 17. The registration to vote does not allow them early voting. They still must be of legal voting age. It is merely that it provides that opportunity for them to get registered. The obvious intention is to attract more younger voters into the voter pool. It's something that we have made a considerable effort to do in terms of all of the people in the state of Oregon to increase the size of our voter pool, to get more people involved in the process, and I think therefore in itself is a fairly laudable idea and bill. And the thing I think, and the thing that convinced me to sign up as a co-sponsor on the bill, was that if I can, I don't want anybody to think this is crude, but if I can use this as an illustration, it's kind of like going fishing. You know, we're out fishing for voters, and if we can get those people signed up early, we get them into the process, get them thinking about it, or maybe it's like you know, some of you have had on occasion to go out to a car agency and buy a car. You would note that the car salesman, or any salesman for that matter, wants you to get you nodding your head yes. They don't want to see, you know, they want the head going this way. They basically want to get you in the mood, get you thinking about owning and driving that car. And I think what, you know, attracted me and my attention to this bill was it's kind of basically the same thing. It's to get young people and give them the opportunity where it's convenient and easy to do to get registered to vote, even though they're not going to be voting until they reach the age of 18 or such. I have, you know, beyond that, nothing more to say.
Thank you. And Representative Unger, welcome to the Rules Committee. You want to give us a little head kickstart here on the testimony? We have a few people to speak to the bill, but why don't you get us started?
Thank you, Chair Garrett. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ben Unger. I'm a state representative. I represent House District 29, which is Cornelius, Forest Grove, and Hillsborough. I appreciate you giving me the time to come and speak with you today about something that's near and dear to my heart. I venture to guess that in this room I might have spent more time than almost anyone registering people to vote. As a college student, we would spend hours trying to track down people who hadn't been registered to get them thousands. I'd venture thousands of hours. And it makes you think there's got to be an easier way. And so this bill represents I think, easier and simpler way to make sure that more of our young people are getting registered to vote. I think you may already know this, and I know Representative Jensen was already speaking to the bill when I walked in. Sorry that I'm late. Current law allows 17-year-olds to register to vote. If we move the law back to allow 16-year-olds to vote, we would capture a very large part of the population that goes into the DMV, gets their driver's license, but currently doesn't get registered. A couple of facts that I thought you might be interested in. 77% of people under the age of 18 who get their driver's license are 16. 22,000 16-year-olds go through the DMV every year, and they don't need to return back to the DMV until they're 24. As you may know, the 18 to 24-year-old population is the least likely to be registered to vote. And so by passing this law and actually allowing those 16-year-olds to get registered when they come into the DMV, we'll capture a lot of those people. By passing this law, we'll also be in good company with other states. Hawaii, Florida, North Carolina, and Rhode Island and Maryland already have and allow 16-year-olds to vote. And I hope this, just like the bill has a bipartisan list of co-sponsors, I hope that we can again have bipartisan support for this idea of trying to capture young people when it's the most convenient for them to get them registered to vote. When we lowered the voter registration age to 17 back in 2007, it passed in a bipartisan manner with both chambers, one dissenting vote on each side. So it is I had a couple of Westland High School students come into my office, and they've been working on this issue, and I asked them why they supported it, and they said, it's just common sense to get these people to register when they go get their driver's licenses, and I could not agree more. Happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you very much.
We'll start with Steve Trout from the Elections Division, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Steve Trout, State Election Director, and I am here on personal assignment of the Secretary. She regrets that she can't be here to throw her full support behind House Bill 2988 in moving the age down to 16. We think this will really help to increase the participation of young people. If we can get them on the grid when they go and get their driver's license at 16, we think we'll be better able to track them and keep them engaged. And there's studies that suggest that if young people vote in the first couple elections they're eligible, then they tend to be long-time voters. And so the Secretary strongly encourages moving this bill forward.
All right. Thank you. Representative Berger?
Yeah, Steve, I was in the room when we discussed the 17-year-old thing. Do we have any numbers on how many the increase in registration in this among 17-year-olds? Are we keeping that data, and so we have some numbers that show the effect of this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, unfortunately, we don't have concrete numbers. We have been doing a lot of outreach to high school seniors and other activities, for instance, in conjunction with National Voter Registration Day, but we haven't been able to capture those precise numbers of 17-year-olds when they're registering. I think by moving to 16, we have better tracking in place through DMV to be able to track those people that register at 16 when they transact business at DMV, so that we would be able to better track the effectiveness of moving the age to 16.
Follow up?
Yeah, I'm kind of interested in that, because if they're registered and can't vote, they must go into a separate, I mean, they're registered, but they aren't sent a ballot until they're 18. So it's, I guess, how can you not notice? I get this would be pretty simple, because DMV will say we registered, because they actually would take it in at the DMV, is that, or they would, so they, and is there anything in this bill, Mr. Chair, that would, I'm curious, this has been ongoing with me, on we pass bills and then we never look back and say, well, what was the effect of that bill? And this one seems a pretty straightforward one that I would like to see 2 years from now, and I don't want to add to costs. I'm not going there.
Is that easily measurable?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, I mean, I can find for you the number of people that are not yet 18 that we have held in abeyance on the rolls in OCVR. I can get you that number.
Yeah, that's
but as far as how many of those happened at DMV versus through a drive or somebody picking up a form, we don't have that. But I can get you the number
that's the number I'm looking for.
That are on hold waiting to turn 18.
Yeah.
Representative Hicks.
How do you know who to hold in abeyance? As in somebody's under 18, they can't vote in the next election. How does that work? What is your tracking mechanism?
So,
or who does it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hicks, that's all built into our database. So it's driven by birth date. And so once you have a birth date and we know that the election happens, know that you'll be 18 on that election day, then that populates you into the eligible voters, just like it would for choosing which voters are going to vote in which district election. So, you know, there was an election yesterday in some parts of the state, and so we use the OCVR database to be able to decide which voters are eligible that live in that district to be able to send ballots to and which ones aren't.
Follow up.
So is that working? I mean, to your knowledge, has there been any ballots sent to 17-year-olds?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hicks, to my knowledge, we haven't had any 17-year-olds that have received ballots, haven't had any of those.
Thanks. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could just comment a little bit, I think, on Senator or Representative Berger's question and point. I think I understand part of what she's looking for, but I think there's another side of this. The idea of a 16-year-old being able to vote when they go in to get their driver's license, it's a kind of one-stop shopping type of thing. There are a lot of 17-year-olds who don't register to vote. They've already gotten their driver's license. They've passed that, you know, particular point. And unless voting is something that's part of the culture of the family or something like that, it's very, very easy for them to pass over it. We used to, when I was at the community college, we made quite an effort to have in the fall of the year voter registrations available there for all of the 18-year-olds that, you know, that and 19-year-olds even that were coming in that weren't registered to vote. I don't think, I don't see any complication in relationship to any kind of voter fraud. We've got all of the stuff in play, you know, to deal
yes.
with that.
This was not an implication of voter fraud. I just would like to know the numbers. What's the, how many kids are we bringing in by doing these things? What's the impact? Representative Unger just commented how hard it is to get them individually. Are we making good progress by doing this? That's basically is all I'm asking, is if there's some way to track this that doesn't cost any money, I'd sure be interested in the numbers. That's all. I'm not implying fraud. I'm just efficacy. Is it working?
Did you have another comment?
Yeah, another thing, Mr. Chair and colleagues. Signing up for your driver's license, getting your driver's license, for a young person is a rite of passage. Yeah. And sociologists make quite a thing of rites of passage, and I think justifiably so. The same thing is true of registering to vote. It's a rite of passage. And, one of the things we'd like, at least I hoped when my children turned 16 and they signed up to get their driver's license, that they had some maturity. Anything like another rite of passage there to a more of an adult status, such as registering to vote, would have been welcomed just because of my natural parental concern about young people in cars.
Thank you, Mr. Trout.
Thank you.
All right. We'll just go down the list. We have Kelsey Douglas, Morgan Haskin, and Sammy Hatch, please. You can go in whatever order you want. Just please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Kelsey Douglas, and we three are part of an AP government class at Westland High School. While researching the Motor Voter Act, we as a class came up with the idea to, or thought that it would be useful to lower the age to 16. So we actually researched this bill and figured out that it was already in session. So over this past year, I've been watching as more and more of my classmates have been driving to school for the first time. And 16-year-olds tend to not push off learning to drive as they gain more independence. And since 17 is currently the eligible age for registration, the vast majority of kids are not eligible to register as they test and cannot seize the opportunity. It would be more convenient if the kids, if the age was lowered, so the kids that would be qualified to vote in the next election and the preceding years would be more enticed to. Increasing voter turnout will not be as effective if the 17-year age limit is maintained, because all of the kids testing for their license at 16 will not have to renew it until well after 18, a time period where an election will have occurred. This could make a difference in voter turnout among the youngest of the qualifying voters, a group that does not tend to vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Garrett, members of the committee. My name is Morgan Haskin. I'm a junior at Westland High School. I'm also part of the Lottie Club, as all three of us are. I'm also here to speak in favor, obviously, of House Bill 2988. I'm sorry. I definitely think that passing this bill would have a number of benefits, including a very likely growth in voter turnout and just being, I mean, it's just so, it just makes it so much easier. And my thought on this is, why not? Why not just get these kids registered? Why not get it done? A statistic that I found recently that I found very shocking was that in the 2008 election in the state, or in the election for President Obama, 41% of young adults aged 18 to 24 were not registered. And I found that shocking. And what I'm thinking is, if this many kids are going to get their driver's license, I feel like if we had this in place and they went and they registered to vote when they were 16, I bet you that number would go up. And a thing I'm going to leave you with is that a lot of kids like me are going to be going off to college soon. And I know that I'm probably going to go to college out of state, and that means I'm not going to be able to register to vote. And so I think if I were to get this done now, it would be a lot easier, because I really want to vote. We are the next generation of voters. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Did you have testimony as well? Okay. Thanks. A question from Vice Chair Hicks.
For any member of our panel, and you don't have to answer, but could you tell us why is voting important to you?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hicks, I personally feel that it's my civic duty to vote, and I care about government because it's affecting me personally in the next couple of years going to college, so I think that I would like to be involved.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Well, I think one of our witnesses is still
wondering. Oh, did you want to address that too? Why don't you?
Representative,
you're welcome
Hicks
to speak to that too.
The rest of the committee, thank you. Sorry. I definitely agree that it is our civic duty to vote, and I just think that it's very important that we have a say in what happens, because, I mean, we vote to make our government work. If we don't vote, this government is not going to work. That's thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for your testimony. Oh, Representative Holby. Sorry.
Thanks. I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was kind of curious whether you saw the potential of being registered to vote while you're still in high school as somewhat of an educational opportunity to figure out what district you live in and maybe enable you to follow elections a little bit closer as to, you know what issues and candidates are actually representing you, and whether you see that as being something beneficial to your classroom.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair and Representative Holvey, I personally find interest in researching that, and I think that in terms of kids, not everyone is allotting the time to research those things, but as kids tend to be last minute and jumping around from thing to thing. If they were already registered to vote, then it would be one less thing for them to worry about, one less thing for them to do, if that answers your question.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Zembro.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for coming forward today and speaking on this bill. I'm curious about what else you might have discovered in doing your research on this subject. In terms of, did you come across anything interesting going on in other states, or just, you know, anything else that really jumped out at you along with this, which I agree with you, I think is an excellent idea?
Representative Dembro, I believe that we're going to have to get back to you on that.
Okay.
We hear that a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we really appreciate you being here and for researching the issue and for leaving school early to get down here and present your testimony, so thanks very much.
Thank you.
Patrick Laswell, Henry Kramer, and Cappy Eaton.
Representative Garrett, members of the committee. I'm Patrick Laswell, Multnomah County Voter Integrity Chair for a Republican Party. Speaking to Representative Jensen's notion of rites of passage, I very much respect that position on this. And I would like to point out that everybody in this room registered to vote in a matter measured in hours after their eligibility, not days or weeks or years. We're all invested here. But rites of passage should not be easy. I agree with your sentiment, but I disagree with the execution in this case. It is a lot to be respected in that notion, but making it easy doesn't necessarily make it better. It would also be of use to know how much more this will cost. Tracking it and ensuring, if we are ensuring, that 16-year-olds aren't voting. It will be embarrassing in the extreme when the exceptions get through, especially since some of the other bills allow alterations to be made electronically. Allow me to assure you that in our video game-centric world, somebody's going to have the class of 2016 wired to a fairly well and have the ages according to their choice. I respect the youth of today and fear them greatly. Their electronic skills are tremendous, and we should be cautious of them. Also, I'd invite the young people in the crowd today to please write down the five most important things in your life today and mail it off to yourself and read it 10 years from now. And in light of that, I'd like to perhaps consider relabeling this bill the Cognitive Dissonance Full Employment Act of 2013. The things that are important to you now are subject to flight and fancy and passion and foolishness. I say this as somebody deeply committed to those very things. It is regrettable that the young ladies speaking did mention the liberty gibbet element of youth. That is not necessarily the most respectable element of a republic, and it is not necessarily what the voters need. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Actually, we'll complete the panel, and we can do questions at once. Henry, go ahead.
Chair Garrett, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Henry Kramer. I'm with the Oregon Bus Project. We engage young people in democracy. We are nothing to be afraid of as young people. Briefly, I think if voting is important to you at 16, chances are it'll be important to you for the rest of your life. But to speak to House Bill 2988, we're strongly in favor of it. We think it's simple. It expands a current pre-registration system we're already using just to align it with the age of the driver's license. No new system at all. It's logical. Motor voter is the most important, the most popular way people register to vote in Oregon. 49% of registered voters register to vote through motor voter. So it makes a lot of sense to align that with 16 18-year-olds when they first get their driver's licenses. In fact, Representative Unger already mentioned 18 to 24 is the least registered demographic. 18, the lowest registered of all of those, partially because they don't get to use, generally, the DMV to register to vote. It's also tested. Representative Unger already talked about what states use it. To Representative Berger's question, I actually have some stats from North Carolina, where they have pre-registration, have for some years. They register about 33,000 16-year-olds a year through the program at essentially zero cost. If you adjust that to Oregon, it'd be about 15,000 16 and 17-year-olds that'd be pre-registered to vote. And it works. People move less between 16 and 18 than they do between 19 and 24. And once you turn 18, that NCOA change of address that you already have in Oregon and the NVRA agency change of address should help that registration follow you for the rest of your time voting in Oregon. And it's meaningful to kids' lives. Like good driving, voting is habit forming. If you vote at 18, chances are you will vote for the rest of your life. And if we get more registered voters at 18, we'll get more lifetime voters. It makes sense, as Representative Jensen said, to combine these rites of passage. Registering to vote after you go through the long, arduous process of getting a driver's license, it makes sense to combine those two. It's like they were separated at birth, and we like House Bill 2988 because it really just gets the family back together. Thanks very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Chair Garrett, members of the Commission, for the record, my name is Kathy Eaton. I'm the Governance Coordinator for the League of Women Voters. As a proponent of voting rights, the League supports efforts to enlarge the voting population. We have experience in registering high school students, and they're very popular. When our teams go out to register in high schools, they have lots of 17-year-olds coming. They were before they were allowed to register. And we also now have 16-year-olds wondering if they can also have that opportunity, because we believe in enlarging the knowledge of young people. It's, as it's been pointed out already, it's important for young people to become acquainted with the democratic representative system that we have. And the sooner they do that, and the sooner that they are encouraged to be participants in that process, the better. So we have the mechanisms, if they register at 16, to keep track of them until they're 18 and actually ready to vote. But in the interim, they can become interested in candidates and measures and the way in which they will be able to affect what happens to themselves and the rest of the citizens of the state of Oregon. So we very much encourage your moving this bill forward.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Representative Hicks.
For Henry, how would you feel about the bill if it prohibited 16-year-olds from affiliating with a political party at the time of registration?
Chair Garrett, members of the committee, I have to think about that. Generally, when we're registering young voters, they register as non-affiliated voters. My guess is they would do the same in this case. My sense is pre-registration should probably, as it's already at 17, should be able to register with whatever party they like. I know in North Carolina, the party registration of pre-registrants tends to line up with the party registration of the state at large. More Republicans use it than Democrats by about 2% in North Carolina, which lines up with the party demographics of North Carolina generally, and still the largest demographic there is non-affiliated voters. Personally, I have no particular stake in which party people register with, but I do think that registered voters should have the same opportunity no matter what age they register at.
Follow up. So would you then not be favorable on the bill? Or would it affect your opinion at all?
Chair Garrett, Representative Hicks, just to clarify the question, if it prohibited 16-year-olds from registering with a party, would I be in favor of the bill still?
That's what I'm asking.
Sure.
Okay, thanks. All right, thank you to the panel. Amanda Tripp Johansson and Anthony Kim and Gina Benavides, please.
Chair Garrett and members of the committee, For the record, my name is Amanda Tripp Johansson. I am the director of the Democracy Cup, a program of the Bus Project Foundation, and currently earning my master's degree in educational leadership and policy at PSU. I'm here to urge you to support House Bill 2988 and allow 16-year-olds to pre-register to vote, just as 17-year-olds can now. The Democracy Cup engages local young professionals to serve as mentors, helping students develop as leaders within their community and bringing democracy to life in classrooms throughout Oregon. The workshop teaches students how to advocate for their beliefs, engage in discussion about issues that matter to them, and concludes with an opportunity for students to register or pre-register to vote. The most common misconception about young people is that we don't care. I have observed without question a reality opposite of this perception. Students care so deeply about their communities, their families, and their education, but students are not aware of how they can engage as citizens and make a difference in the world. In my work as director of the Democracy Cup, I've interacted with more than 10,000 high school students, namely juniors and seniors, many of whom are from each of your districts, ranging from Union and Umatilla County to Marion and Lane County. The Oregon Department of Education currently has a core standard for social science, number 34, that requires graduates must be able to explain the responsibilities of a citizen, including paying taxes and voting. Right now, there is no question that schools and teachers are trying their best, but class sizes are larger than ever, resources are limited, and a recent study, 2012 City Club of Portland, an executive summary on civics, found that there's currently a gap in the education that we provide. We are not adequately preparing our graduates to become active citizens. Bill number 2988 addresses this need by ensuring that 16-year-olds have the opportunity to pre-register to vote during their first interaction with government when obtaining a driver's license at the DMV. By allowing students to pre-register, we will show these students that voting is another coming-of-age right, a part of being an adult and a community member. We cannot leave this responsibility exclusively to our schools. House Bill 2988 shows our students that the voices of all Oregonians, including young people, need to be heard to be a part of our healthy democracy. Young people care, but lack, again, the knowledge of how to directly influence the things that they care about and to effectively make change in their community. I urge you to allow our students the ability to express their convictions through the electoral process by getting them on the track to become lifelong engaged voters. I am asking the House Rules Committee for their support for House Bill 2988. This ensures that all Oregonians have a voice in our democracy. Thank you for taking the time to listen to a few of these voices today. Please vote yes on House Bill 2988 and show young people that they matter and help foster the development of engaged citizens and future leaders of Oregon.
Chair Garrett, members of the committee, my name is Anthony Kim. I'm a community organizer here in Oregon who did voter registration and Gather the Vote work with the Oregon Bus Project during the 2012 election cycle. I urge you to support House Bill 2988 as this bill will expand access to some of the most important members of our constituency, namely our youth. House Bill 2988 gives thousands of 16-year-olds who visit the DMV every year the opportunity to register to vote, exposing them to the rights and responsibilities of voting from the outset rather than trying to catch them again years later when they come back to renew their permit or apply for a license. The DMV's Motor Voter Program is a proven program that is very effective at registering new voters, and this is a chance to expand that network to catch everyone from the moment that they're eligible to apply. As a Korean American who has done much of his work with youth and in communities of color, I've seen firsthand the long-term effects of political disenfranchisement and underrepresentation within our communities, especially among youth of color whose parents come from backgrounds where their communities were consistently underserved by their own government, whether abroad in the countries from which they emigrated or even here in our own backyard for generations. It's far too easy for youth to become disengaged from politics, viewing it as a system that was never meant to include them. when it's hard to find a face like yours in local government and when your family's most pressing needs are viewed as special interests rather than community interests, when elders in your own community choose not to participate in the political process, it's hard to find compelling reasons to vote. We learn by example, and sometimes the examples are set for us. While rooted in a history and experience that must be respected, ultimately do more harm than good in shaping us into responsible and active citizens. This is especially true when popular media exposes our youth more often to messages of cynical disillusionment than of faith and progress, as when the popular musician Lupe Fiasco took to Twitter declaring to over 1 million followers that he would not be voting for president in the 2012 election. But at the end of the day, it's not celebrity endorsements or flashy media campaigns urging us to rock the vote that drives many of us to do so. Rather, it's a deeply ingrained sense of responsibility and a shared commitment to standing up for our own beliefs and making them heard, even if we may disagree on the details, because our convictions compel us to make what we believe to be the right choice for the community. And what better time to teach this commitment than the moment that these youth get behind a wheel and begin to learn how to interact with society, no longer as children, but as young adults. When they receive that provisional license, we are entrusting them to take on the additional responsibility of learning to think not only of their own lives, but also the lives of others, so that when they turn 18, they can step into adulthood with all the privileges and responsibilities that come along with it. We must change our culture from one that tells our youth that they're entitled to any number of privileges after reaching a certain magical age to one that teaches them about the responsibilities that they will be taking on as adults. We must counteract a culture of hopelessness with a culture of responsibility and participation in politics. Thank you for your time, and please support House Bill 2988.
Chair Garrett, members of the committee, my name is Gina Benavides, and I live in Salem, Oregon, as a junior at West Salem High School. I am 16 years old, and I am testifying in favor of House Bill 2988 because I think it's a really great idea and can help people like me and my peers. I do my best to be an engaged student in Oregonian. I'm on Salem Kaiser's founding mock trial team, have done speech and debate, and I volunteer through the Rotary Club, as well as play varsity lacrosse for West Salem since my freshman year. I care about giving back to my community, and I believe House Bill 2988 would help me and my peers grow even more civically engaged by allowing us to get registered to vote while we're still learning about government and how democracy works in America. Right now, we're learning about the rights of the people in the U.S. government in history classes, about the importance of voting and doing our civic duty. We're learning that one vote really can make a difference, but for many of my peers, where and how to register to vote is less clear. When I learned about the Motor Voter Act, it became more clear. But then I learned I can't use it yet, even though I can get a driver's license. I think we should fix that. Since I'm 16, it's probably no surprise to you that a lot of my friends are getting licenses right now. We're excited to have that freedom that comes with the license, but also recognize that it comes with responsibility, much like being a voter. It's both a freedom and a responsibility. My peers and I don't just want to be drivers or students. We want to be engaged Oregonians. It would be great if we could get a jump start on doing our civic duty by getting registered to vote when we get our licenses. Motor voter just makes so much sense, but what sense does it make to let such a great program not be used to the fullest it can be? I hope you'll make motor voter finally be utilized right and allow every eligible citizen who gets a license to have the opportunity to register to vote. I urge you to pass House Bill 2988. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify before you today.
Thank you. Any questions? Good. Representative Berger.
Ladies and gentlemen, I just wish all testimony was that cogent and well-written that comes before us. Thank you very much.
Well said.
And well delivered.
We appreciate you being here. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Maddie Leonard, Lou Imbriano, and Philip Weiss.
Chair Garrett, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Madeline Leonard, and I am a student at Sunset High School. I strongly support HB 2988 because I believe that broader participation in democracy equals a better democracy. The biggest obstacle to voting for new voters is simply being registered. Currently in Oregon, there are over 700,000 eligible but unregistered voters. HB 2988 attacks the problem of unregistered voters by supplying a convenient voter registration opportunity for all of the 20,000 16-year-olds who visit the DMV to get their driver's licenses every year. So I'm currently 16, and I recently went through the process of earning my driver's license and experienced one of my first interactions with a government agency, the DMV. It took a lot of hard work to get my license, over 30 hours of Oregon Driver's Education Center instructional classroom time, 12 hours of in-the-car drive lessons, and over 50 hours of additional driving experience with my parents. In addition, there was extensive paperwork and time spent at the DMV. I had to provide items including proof of legal presence, proof of legal name, proof of address, proof of school enrollment, and for one of the first times in my life, I actually had to know my social security number. Even scheduling a drive test was a bit of an ordeal in itself. So my experience with the DMV is shared with 20,000 other Oregon 16-year-olds every year. Teens like myself, going to the DMV to get their driver's licenses, are taking the first steps to actively participate as adults in our society. There is no better time to get young people civically engaged than when they have taken the time to learn about the rules of the road and are enthusiastic about becoming more independent, law-abiding community members. Those hours spent in the ODEC classrooms, time spent practice driving with instructors, was all in an effort to foster lifelong good driving habits. Why not also develop good voting habits? Allowing 16-year-olds to register to vote when they have already taken a big step toward becoming an adult greatly increases their chances of becoming lifetime voters. The Motor Voter Act is great, but it could be far more effective. Even though we have 17-year-old pre-registration, the majority of teens don't go into the DMV when they're 17 to apply for their licenses. So by lowering the pre-registration age to 16, we can greatly increase the number of registered voters and engage a new generation of lifetime voters. So speaking as a 16-year-old, I can testify that just as I accepted my privilege to drive, I would also gladly and passionately accept my right and responsibility to be civically engaged with the first step of registering to vote. For these reasons, I ask the House Rules Committee for your support of Bill HB 2988. I'd also like to thank the committee for taking the time to review my letter for support for 16-year-old pre-voter registration. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Garrett, members of the committee, thank you for having us here. For the record, my name is Philip Weiss, and I'm a student at Lincoln High School and an alumni of the Lincoln Constitution and mock trial teams. For many students, voter registration comes in the form of an extra chore instead of a civic duty. 18-year-olds who have not registered are dissuaded from joining the political process because they have to jump over extra hoops to be able to vote. Every year at the DMV, roughly 20,000 16-year-olds get their driver's licenses, but none of them are able to register to vote. By contrast, about 5,000 to 6,000 17-year-olds go in to get their license and are able to register to vote through the Motor Voter Program. Why should we be holding students back from being able to register during what will be some of their only first visits to a government office? I know that for me, the stresses of a tough high school schedule does not give me a great deal of free time. Registering to vote, while integral for my civic responsibility, does not register highly on my list of free time activities. If students like me could register at the DMV while they're getting their driver's license, it becomes much easier and more convenient to be able to participate in the voting system. It also helps the voter pool. The more young people that are engaged in politics, the more of those people can help choose legislation for the future. At 16 years old, students are not yet entrenched in the worries of life after high school. Ages 18 through 24 are filled with worries that for many people are more important than voting, such as finding a job or going to a good college. No wonder this age group, 18 through 24, has the lowest voter turnout for any of the age groups. Voting habits start young, so it is important for this group to become active citizens. If people can register to vote when they're 16, another roadblock is removed. And another step is taken towards accessible voting for everybody. In my opinion, we should be following in the footsteps of states like Delaware, Florida, Hawaii, Maryland, North Carolina, and Rhode Island, who have all passed legislation like this one, or like this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Garrett, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lou Briano. I am 16 and a junior at Franklin High School in Portland. I'm here to express my support for House Bill 2988 because I think registering to vote should be easy, secure, and accessible for all eligible Oregonians. This bill proposes a small change to our current voter registration process, which would make it far more effective at capturing new and eager voters. By lowering the pre-registration age from 17 to 16 years old by just 1 year, my generation could not only learn about being civically engaged citizens through our coursework, but apply these lessons to our actual lives by gaining the privilege of becoming registered voters. I consider myself fortunate because my family has always emphasized the importance of voting as a duty of a citizen and an active community member. When I started at Franklin High School, I realized not everyone thought about voting the same way I did. So when I heard about the Democracy Cup High School Civic Engagement Competition, I wanted to be involved. I participated in a lunchtime voter registration drive and realized that most of my peers were almost entirely unfamiliar with the process of registering to vote. Many people thought of voting as something that they only had to worry about when they turned 18. They thought as if their voice was irrelevant and as if their opinion didn't matter. When I told them they could pre-register to vote at 17, many were extremely surprised and excited and immediately pulled out their driver's license to begin filling out their voter registration form. That day, during my 35-minute lunch period, I registered over 25 17-year-olds. Most of us 16-year-olds are required to take government and civics classes. While we are learning what it means to be a civically engaged citizen, 16-year-old pre-registration would make these lessons real in our lives and encourage us to further educate and prepare ourselves to be informed future voters. It would make civics more than just an abstract lesson in a textbook. It would show us firsthand that civic engagement should be part of our regular lives. I know if my 16-year-old peers knew about pre-registration just like the 17-year-olds did, they would absolutely use it. Many of us consider turning 16 to be a milestone. They're sweet 16s, you can apply for most jobs, and look forward to going to the DMV to get your driver's license. Turning 16 is a big deal for us. It's when we start to become young adults and begin to take on new responsibilities. It's when many of us begin to think about no longer living with our parents and begin to think about having to make decisions on our own. Pre-registration for 16-year-olds would be perfect because it would catch us at the very beginning of our transition to young adulthood. This is an issue that I care about, and lowering the pre-registration age has nothing but good consequences for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you. All three of you, any questions?
No.
Appreciate you being here, really.
Thank you.
We have two more witnesses, Ms. Bill, Janice Deisinger, and Sandy Radu, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Garrett and the members of the committee. Thank you for letting me come today and express my opinion. I'm from Gresham, Oregon, and Janice Deisinger is my name. I'm opposed to Bill HB 2988 because I don't think it's necessary to register someone so far in advance. We don't have any other type of registration for anything else, even if applying for Social Security, you just do that a couple months ahead of time, getting a hunting license, a driver's license. You don't do that so far in advance for those activities as well. Selective service, you don't do that in advance. It's I just don't think it's necessary. If we leave it the way it is, we've got a rite of passage at 16 to register to vote. Get your driver's license, 17 to register, and 18 to vote. So that gives something in each place. And I think that The other bills that are going forward this session that change the responsibility of the registration group, this registration agency, their responsibility is changing from shall to may, and I'm concerned about the influence of the registration agency having more opportunity to influence that group on how they register. So I just like that to, that along with this bill causes me to have some concern. And I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sandy Radu, Beaverton, Oregon. I'm here, Representative Garrett, members of the committee. I'm here today to testify against HB 2988, and I don't have anything against 16-year-olds. I think they're absolutely wonderful. I think they're absolutely fabulous, but in the eyes of the law, they aren't adults yet. And with all due respect for Representative Jensen, a rite of passage, I think for voting, it is our most sacred right and privilege as citizens of this country. And as a trustee of the of those sacred rights, I think that we should save those for the ones who are legally able to vote. There's some practical issues in that having the state have to be the custodian of the registration information for 2 years of an inactive voter that is not of age yet is do the same rules pertain to those people that pertain to the 18-year-olds, 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds that don't vote for several years and are on the inactive list? What happens when they moved? Are their registrations updated as well as the 18 and 19-year-old active voters are? I have a lot of practical questions there as well. And then finally, and the last point of logic is, will we all be back here in a few years waiting to register 15-year-olds that are getting their learner's permit? Thank you.
Representative Berger.
I think she's brought up some interesting points, and I'd like to have Mr. Trout speak to those.
We'll bring him up as soon as we have other finish other questions for this group. Representative Denbrough.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So we've heard that this registration at age 16 has been in place in other states. Have you heard of problems that these other states have had in implementing this law?
I have not, but I have not done the research either.
Okay. Nor have I. So, but I suspect if there had been problems, we'd have heard of them.
I can certainly do some research and get the information to the committee.
All right. Thank you both for your testimony. Mr. Trout, if you wouldn't mind coming forward again. Berger, could you maybe restate what questions you'd like him to address?
The question that I'm curious about is, what does it do to... You have a bunch of inactive voters, and how do you make sure that they don't vote early, they don't vote late, and that if they move, what happens to them? They don't get sent. I mean, we heard testimony that this is a pretty stable, not moving population. I get that. But actually, a lot of them do go off to college before they're 18, so they would be gone. And so how do you manage this database that you told me a few minutes ago with 17-year-olds, you would find out how many there are, and now you're going to add two. So I think that's my fundamental question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger. As I knew as I was sitting here earlier and my pocket was buzzing, my good staff has responded, and as of January 23rd, we have approximately 7,000 17-year-olds that are in OCVR that are waiting to be activated. And so that also goes to your other question. They're not technically inactive. They're waiting to be activated upon hitting 18. So once they're activated at 18, then if they don't vote in two consecutive federal elections, then they would be inactivated, and the normal processes would apply there. So although they're not active registered voters while they're 16 or 17, they're not of the definition of inactive voter, which there's some trigger there. So the current laws on the books for inactivating a voter for lack of participation or other reasons would still apply, but the clock wouldn't start until they turned 18 and their registration was active.
Mr. Chair, I had a feeling that that shouldn't be an unknown number, and I'm glad to see that your staff got that, because it seemed to me that should be a number that we know. What about the moving? The ballots are, if a 16-year-old is registered, you would assume that they're at the address, just like you would assume any voter, such as I am, hasn't moved unless you have a re-registration. So it would be sent to whatever address they registered under at the DMV. Is that what you're saying?
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, yes, they will be sent a ballot to the address that's on file with us as they registered. However, if we receive notification from that voter, we can update that information just as we would any other. Because we're not sending them a sample ballot or ballots, we're not going to have those ballots returned to us like we would for an actively registered voter, that we'd be able to update and contact the voter from the yellow change of address sticker. But if we did have some communication, you know, written, email, phone call from the voter updating their address, then we could update that for the voter before their registration was active when they turned 18.
Thank you.
Any further questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Trout.
You're welcome.
We have completed our testimony, and we'll close a public hearing on House Bill 2988 with a thanks to everyone who took the time to be here to share their views on the bill. And there's not a fiscal impact, or sorry, there's a minimal fiscal impact on this bill. We have the statement, so the bill is ready to move. And I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 2988.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2988 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Hoyle moves House Bill 2988 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion on the motion? Vice Chair Hicks.
I'm going to file a minority report. I'm going to vote no, but I would vote yes and probably support the bill if we prohibit political party affiliation from being designated at the time of registration for 16-year-olds.
Okay.
So I'll make sure you notice the minority report.
All right. Appreciate that. Further discussion on the motion? Representative Denbrough?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. If you'll indulge me, Rep. Hicks, could you explain why that's an issue for you?
Because, as a father, I do not want political parties harassing my 15-year-old daughter to try and get her affiliation. And I represent a lot of parents.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, out of respect for my for Representative Hicks, I will vote no. It requires two no votes on the committee, and I will vote no. And my other friend over there is, of course, a sponsor of this bill. I wouldn't expect him to. So I will join with Mr. Hicks in voting no on this bill.
Understood. Thank you very much. Representative Denbrough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say that I really applaud the effort behind this bill. I will support it, actually, with enthusiasm. I look back to my own past, and so I'm going to date myself. It was really hard for me to wait to be able to vote until I was 21. and it was especially frustrating because the year that I turned 21, the age was lowered to 18. And I can't tell you how frustrating that was. I was one of those people that was really anxious to be able to vote and was thinking a lot about it. And, during that last four-year period, the presidential year, when I knew I'd be able to vote in that next presidential election, it was very, very important to me. And, it's really hard for me to see a downside to our allowing 16-year-olds to, seriously be thinking about voting. And that's what I see this as doing. The issue of political affiliation, I think that I don't see why these should be, these registrants should be treated differently than anyone. That age 18, if you register, or age 17, if you register at age 17, you have the right to indicate a political party. Again, I can see that there might be some instances in which there would be some harassment, as the good representative mentioned, but, you know, I just don't see that as a serious problem. So,
would you like to respond, Vice Chair?
Well, and good representative, respectfully, you're ignoring the obvious. I mean, there's going to be harassment. It's not appropriate for 15-year-olds to get pulled into this. I don't want my 15-year-old daughter.
Well, this doesn't apply to 15.
It does, because prior to their 16-year-old, the 16-year-olds go to register for the DMV for the license at their 16-year birthday, meaning leading up to the 16th birthday, when they are 15, they are going to be subject to all of the polls and pressures of both political parties. This is not a world I want my 15-year-old being subjected to. I am in agreement that 16-year-olds should, in all likelihood, have the opportunity to register, and that's what all the testimony here has been. Nothing has been said about, even the bus project agrees with me on this point. It's more appropriate to leave the political stuff, the party affiliation, out of it until they're 18.
Representative Jensen, did you have a comment?
Yes. Like Representative Denbrough, I'm old enough to remember when the voting age was 21. I'm also old enough to remember the conversations that took place around the country, at least the country I lived in, when proposals were made to allow 18-year-olds to vote. Quite frankly, I've been politically active enough to have been something of an observer, both from my political activity and also from my professional background, to have paid some attention to political behavior, voting behavior in America. I saw no dramatic change in the behavior when the 18-year-olds became old enough to vote, except perhaps for those who wished to grumble about they had to wait an extra 3 years, and in light of the fact that the bill does not call for or allow 16-year-olds to vote, it really allows them to register. I don't think there would be any drastic political change in the American politics at that point, such as the advent of a new political party championing the right of 15-year-olds to not only register but to vote. I also note that as far as choice of political parties, the record in American history is pretty consistent that the children of Democrats vote, register as Democrats, whether they register at 17, 18, 21, or in some cases, older than that. So I don't see it making any, having any type of consequence in that area. And furthermore, having had the opportunity to test the waters in, at least two of the major political parties in the United States, as well as the waters of being unaffiliated, don't think it has had a real strong adverse effect on me. So the arguments certainly are, at least in my opinion, from a gray-haired old man's perspective non-persuasive.
Representative Denbrough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one further point about the question of political registration. You know, I mean, one of the challenges that we would face is that if someone didn't register with a political party, then they're not eligible to vote in a primary, right? And it might well be that their very first vote would be in a primary. So presumably, then they would have to go in, you know, and change their registration, and you know, hit the deadline of the, you know, the period that would allow them to be able to vote in the primary. And voting in the primary is an important part of our electoral process.
So it's fascinating to me how fast this debate shifted from whether 16-year-olds should be allowed to vote to whether they should be allowed to affiliate with a political party at the time of registration.
Well, again, I think as was said, probably most of them will not choose, you know, will choose to be non-affiliated. I think in my experience, registering college students, that is the most prevalent, thing. But there will be some who are going to want to register as Democrats. There are going to be some who are going to want to register as Republicans. And it's just hard for me to see why they shouldn't have that ability. Or some other party, I'm sorry.
All right. We have a motion. I think we've exhausted the discussion, at least until we get to the floor. Why don't we do a roll call vote, please?
And the motion, Mr. Chair, is to move the bill to the floor with a due pass?
Correct.
Thank you.
Representative Barnheim.
Aye.
Representative Berger.
No.
Representative Denbrough.
Aye.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Representative Holvey.
Aye.
Representative Kennemer.
Excuse.
He's excused.
Vice Chair Hoyle.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hicks?
No.
Chair Garrett?
Aye. Motion passes. And I will ask, pardon?
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Representative Jensen and Representative Unger will be the co-carriers of the bill. Yes, sir.
May I offer that this will be my second opportunity to have had a proposal made to file a what do we call it on bills, a minority report on bills that I have sponsored
today.
Congratulations. You're the chamber, sir.
So it's the pattern is established, I guess.
Thanks again to the students who came down and for sparking this lively debate that we've had. So we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2017. Three. And first call Andrew Nesbitt, Patrick Laswell, and Steve Trout, please. And Ms. Seiler, what is this bill?
Yes, and members, House Bill 2017 allows a voter who does not have valid Oregon driver's license, driver permit, or state identification card to update voter registration using online voter registration system by supplying last four numbers of their voters of the voter's social security number. There is a no revenue statement. We have not received a fiscal impact on the measure.
Mr. Trout, why don't you start, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Long time no see.
We missed it.
I am here under the enthusiastic support of Secretary of State Kate Brown in support of House Bill 2017. Again, anything that we can do to increase the ability of people to update their registration is something that is a positive, and especially being able to do it through our online registration system makes it more accurate, cheaper to administer, and we'd ask for an aye vote.
My name is Andrew Nesbitt, 1710 Southeast Belmont, Portland, Oregon. I am a tiny bit confused because I am not sure what the line that says update registration means, whether this would give an opportunity for a person to register using the last four digits, or whether they can only update a currently existing registration using the last four digits. Without regard to which one of these it means, I'm against it, but I would be curious, because if it merely means you have the right to update, we are giving people the right to update with an additional form of ID, which they would not need, because in order to register, they would have had to have one of the other forms of ID available to them. So if that's true, all this seems to me to do is provide an opportunity for computer mischief by people who want to play about with the last four digits of various people's Social Security numbers. And I tend to believe that this would both cost money, and it doesn't seem to me to have any noticeable benefit if it's actually intended to allow people to register utilizing their Social Security numbers. I have a problem with it because even the Social Security Administration believes that Social Security numbers aren't a valid form of ID. I spent a little bit of time trying to figure out how many people in Oregon would be likely to have the same last four digits. And I apologize, this got dropped into my computer at 2 o'clock in the morning and I did not have time to complete figuring that out. I did discover, to my surprise, that there exists a protected class of religious groups wherein the members are allowed to not register for Social Security due to religious objections to insurance. I believe I referenced the law in the handout that I sent to you. And it does worry me a little bit that we might very well be refusing people the opportunity to use this form of registration on what amounts to religious grounds. It also concerns me that Oregon already has entire classes of voters who can vote in Oregon elections but are not allowed to vote in federal elections because they're not HAVA compliant voters. And it would seem to me that this will quite obviously increase these numbers and thus complicate the job of the various county clerks. Other than that, I've got nothing.
All right, thank you. Mr. Laswell.
Chair Garrett, members of the committee, thank you for letting me speak. My primary concern is, as one of Andrew's, which is the identity theft incentivizing this makes. The last four digits of a Social Security number are wildly insecure at this stage. Our friends at Apple have done their part by making that public record for tens of millions of their customers. So there are huge amounts of security holes associated with the last four digits of the Social Security number, as well as, of course, all of us who served in the military and repeatedly had to use our last four of our Social Security numbers signing in for CHOW. As a consequence, this is an opportunity for additional voter fraud, and it makes engaging in identity theft more valuable. I'm opposed to it on those two grounds.
Okay, we take questions for the panel. Mr. Trout, as long as you're up here, just confirm my understanding that this applies only to updating existing registrations, not registering for the first time.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. So an update is someone who has already registered in Oregon that we have in the database, and it would just be updating their address, their political party, their name, any of those factors, but it would not be for a new registration.
Right. Okay. Representative Berger.
Mr. Trout, or perhaps Mr. Chair, I know that there is an emergency clause on this bill. Is there an emergency here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, I'm not the author of the bill. Whether there's an emergency or not, I think it's driven by allowing more people to be able to access this information for elections. you know, there will be elections this year, the biggest one's going to be in May. This won't be in effect before then, so
Mr. Chair.
I'm sure we could wait until January, but
follow up.
I have not had any of my constituents call me up and say, gee, I couldn't do online registration change because I don't have a driver's license. I'm wondering where this is coming from, this immediate need to do this right now.
Representative Berger, I just would point out,
it's not an emergency clause?
Well, no, there is. Staff pointed out that there's an emergency clause, but the amendments, the bill doesn't actually become operative until January of 2014. The emergency clause is to give the Secretary of State's office time to implement it.
Well, okay, then
maybe that's the emergency.
An emergency in my mind.
Okay.
Because as I just pointed out, nobody's rushing to my door saying this is a terrible problem that absolutely has to be solved. So I'm going, wow, a big push over. Is there a problem here?
Right, and Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that reminder, because there will be a fiscal associated with this for us having to change programming within OCVR, and so therefore it will take some time to implement that and have that developed so that it'll be in effect on January 1st of 2014.
Is there a fiscal in our packet?
We don't have it yet.
Members, we have not received the fiscal back yet, but they're anticipating one.
Thank you.
And I haven't been asked for one yet, so I don't know what that means. I'm ready.
Representative Demereaux.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I did sign on to this bill, and part of what motivated me was having heard from a number of students who don't have driver's licenses, and you know this for that, and you know they wanted to update their registration electronically, and so it was a challenge for them, and this seemed to be a way of dealing with that challenge. They all had Social Security numbers, but not driver's licenses.
I'm glad to hear somebody.
Representative, I skipped Representative Hicks, and then we'll go to Representative Jensen afterwards.
For Mr. Trout, is there some reason we're using only the last four of the Social Security number versus the entire number?
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hicks, the last four is part of the Help America Vote Act that was passed in 2002, federal law, that says that when you register to vote, you have to provide your driver's license if you have one. Mm-hmm. If you don't have one, then you can provide the last four digits of the Social Security number that we can use again to identify these voters within our database. And then if you don't have either of those, then we assign a unique identifying number. So we only capture when someone fills it out and registers the last four digits. So that's all we're going to have in our database to be able to match. Really, this is talking about security on who's going to be able to log in to the online voter registration system and update their information. We need to make sure that they have enough keys to be able to go through there, and that we have confidence that that is the person that's going forward to update that registration. And so that's the reason that it's just a four-digit, just the last four of the social.
So at least, I mean, you at least have confidence that that's the person who initially presented the last four numbers of their Social Security number along with their name. But is there any way of assuring that the rest of the Social Security number for which the last four were allegedly pulled is actually attached to the name that was presented to the Secretary of State's office?
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hicks, we do have the ability to ping against the Social Security database to confirm that the last four digits that were provided match with the name and the birthday of the person that was submitted. So we do go through that level of a check.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Hicks, has asked the questions that I was concerned about and was wondering what comes up when you punch in the four digits, and but I think the question's been answered, so thank you.
Thank you, all three of you. I think that's it. Janice Deisinger and Sandy Radu, please.
Chair Garrett and committee members, I'm Janice Deisinger, Gresham, Oregon. Before I make my comments, I just want to make sure I understand that the question you had on section the new section 4 here, it says a person who completes the registration card electronically under the section consents to use the person's driver's license, driver's permit, state identification card signatures, or the last four digits of their social security number for voter registration purposes. So I understood that they could register online with their last four digits. Am I wrong in reading that?
I believe that the testimony we've heard is that this bill is intended to and does only allow a person to update their registration, not to register for the first time.
Is that what that says?
Yes, it says if you register, you're consenting to the use of those four digits. It doesn't say that you can register for the first time using those four digits.
Okay. I am opposed to the bill, regardless of for using the last four digits of the Social Security number. Our goal is to register everyone in the state that's eligible to vote. I'm all for that. I think we need to be very careful that we're only registering people that are eligible to vote according to the Constitution, which means they're a citizen, a resident, and 18 years of age. So if you look at I supplied you with some information from the Census Bureau for 2000. I couldn't find the citizen population of Oregon in the 2010, but in the 2000 census, there's 192,000 non-citizens in Oregon. And if we make such a very big push for voter registration within our state, I'm afraid that some of the non-citizens will get the impression somewhere along the line that they can register as well. And we would not be doing our diligence as citizens to keeping our voter rolls clean and only abiding by the Constitution if we don't require proof of that. If you don't have a driver's license and you want to register, I've supplied you with the application for voter registration and for Social Security card, and that along with this other piece here, it has all of the instructions for it, and you'll see that you can get your Social Security card with just a student ID. You don't need any other proof. And so non-citizens get Social Security cards, so that would enable someone to be able to just continue to be able to register to vote as a non-citizen they've signed something that says they're a citizen, but they could still get away with it. So I'm very cautious of furthering the use of the Social Security number as ID. I would encourage you to use all 10 digits. When I talked to the person at the Social Security Administration, they told me that you are not using the actual Social Security number if you don't use all 10 digits, that it's absolutely not effective for identifying someone if you don't have all 10 digits. And I had asked Steve Trout in times past last year if they could tell me if the table that they used within the OCVR excludes non-citizens, if it's free from I-10 numbers, which are given to non-citizens. And I have never been able to get an answer for that. So I don't know if that table is exclusive of non-citizens and only includes citizens. And so I think that'd be a very important thing to clarify with the OCVR information. And if we're going to allow people to use just the Social Security card instead of a DMV license, the DMV establishes some presence, a residency here in Oregon, whereas the Social Security doesn't give us any clues to where the person lives, that we might want to ask the Secretary to check with other states and make it a requirement that they check with other states to make sure that people aren't voting from out of state. So those are the things that I would ask for.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Radu.
Representative Garrett, or Chair Garrett, Representative Hicks, Hoyle, and other members of the committee. I am opposed to this bill, but for a different reason than my colleague.
I need your name for the record, please.
I'm sorry?
Your name for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sandy Radu, and I'm from Beaverton. And I'm opposed to this, but for a different reason. I don't believe it goes far enough. As you are probably aware, in Oregon, we have two classes of voters. We have the HAVA compliant, which are people that are fully qualified and have provided the proper instruments of identification and residency that the federal government requires. And then we have others that have not provided all those necessary instruments who are allowed to vote in state and local elections, but not federal elections. Because of those two classes, and Oregon is the only state in the country that has that separation, because of that, we have extra handling at the elections office. We have ballots that have to be specially marked, handled, and dealt with a supervisor full-time and several election board members. It requires all kinds of different things. Some of those ballots are rejected. Some of them are accepted. The overhead and time is considerable. And I would like to see instead that we take the language in this bill, instead replace it with language that would make Oregon HAVA compliant. There is another bill available, or there's some content in another bill that would make that so, and I would like to recommend that be done instead of this bill, and that's why I'm not in favor of this. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? All right, thank you both. Final panel is Henry Kramer, Ethan Furpo, and Cappy Eaton.
Chair Garrett, members of the committee, for the record, Henry Kramer with the bus project. We're in favor of House Bill 2017. I think it's a small thing. We think it's important to real Oregonians. To be really clear, this changes nothing about first-time voter registrations in Oregon at all. When we passed online voter registration in 2009, the original intent, to my recollection, of having the DMV record required is because you need the signature to match against ballots. That's a really important thing for first-time registrations. You need that signature to be able to count the vote. For folks who are already registered on the record, we already have their signature, and so that's less necessary. Since OCVR database already has the last four Social Security last four digits of the SOCH on file, it's easy to match for HAVA records. It makes accurate lists more likely, as when people move, more people can update. It means we're sending fewer ballots to bad locations. It means folks, if they want to vote in primaries, can vote in primaries, even if they end up getting registered in the first time as non-affiliated voters. You know, it won't affect that many people. 90% or higher of folks in Oregon of eligible citizens have DMV records. But that does mean there are 10% that don't. That's particularly older voters, voters of color, who are statistically less likely to have state-issued ID. I'm not one of those. My roommate is one of those. Due to my relationship with my roommate, he's not here today. That's not true. He's a fine guy. But Ethan, however, is a real person who would benefit from this change. Like I said, the bus project is in support of House Bill 2017. We encourage you to pass the bill. Happy to answer any questions, and thank you very much for your time.
Chairman Garrett, honorable members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ethan Furpo. I am a freelance illustrator, designer, and political campaigner in Portland, Oregon. I'm here to urge you to vote for this. I am part of that 10%. The last ID I had with Oregon State expired in December, and because I don't drive a motor vehicle, there's really very few reasons for me to go and get a new one. Personally, I feel that voting at both the state and federal level is still very much a national right that we should be able to participate in at our whim. Right now, you can't do that. I can already update my registration information on paper, as I did last year three times, using just the four digits of my Social Security number without needing my state ID. I don't see, for all the reasons that Henry Kramer just mentioned, why this is anything other than a logistical fix and a line on a website that didn't need to be there in the first place. Personally, I think in a lot of respects, like, we got to help people register anywhere in Oregon they want to register as well as they can. As I said, I'm an illustrator and designer. I don't go into an office. If I wasn't helping run voter registration drives during election seasons, I don't know if I'd ever see them. And I have helped register tens and tens and tens of thousands of voters over the course of the last decade. I think this is exceptionally important to do, and as it has been said by the Secretary of State's office, it also just saves money. So, thank you.
Chair Garrett, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kathy Eaton, Governance Coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. You already have heard, I think, the major arguments in favor of 2017, and we're on board with those. I did want to follow up on a question that Representative Berger asked with regard to the emergency clause. The only reason I could see for immediate action would be for the May primary. I don't know how soon it would be passed, but it's possible that there are voters needing to upgrade before the deadline before that May election. So I could see that as a possible reason to have an emergency clause there. But this is an opportunity for people, as you've just heard, who are in that 10% who have difficulty. And these people are already registered. They're not aliens. They are people who have been in the process and for whatever reason don't have the proper identification that is usually required. So we support this bill.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you to the panel.
Thank you.
That's all the testimony on this bill. This bill's not ready to work. We don't have a physical impact statement. So I'm going to.
Chair.
Yes.
If I may read from this 2013 Act being necessary for the immediate preservation of the public peace, health, and safety, an emergency is declared to exist, and this 2013 Act takes effect upon its passage. I do not see any emergency in this bill whatsoever, and I will request an amendment that removes the emergency clause.
All right. Vice Chair Hicks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just pondering this issue, I think there's a reason that ORS 247019 doesn't already include this as identification, which is that it's not, in my mind, comparable to a driver's license, a driver permit, or a state identification card. There's been testimony that there have been substantial leaks of Social Security information and the numbers and names attached to them. I can't remember there being similar leaks of driver's licenses, permits, and identification cards, and so I'm very skeptical about this bill at this moment.
All right. Any further comments before we close the hearing? All right, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2017. And open a public hearing on House Bill 3175 with the caution that we're running a little short on time. So I'm going to ask everyone to make an extra effort to be concise in your testimony. We have about 8-9 witnesses. Emma Calloway, Henry Kramer, and Joe Holliday, please.
And members, House Bill 3175 directs public universities and community colleges to increase voter registration access and information. There is a -1 amendment. It removes the requirement that official student government be given permission from school to make at least a 10-minute presentation in classroom of every course offered each academic term, provides school discretion to allow official student government opportunity to provide a classroom presentation.
Go ahead.
Great. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Emma Calloway. Thank you, Chair Garrett and members of the committee for hearing this bill today. I'd like to walk through a few pieces of the bill, but absolutely keep to the time constraint that you've mentioned. So first, I'd like to say that OSA represents over 100,000 students statewide, representing student governments, who participate in nonpartisan voter registration drives. In this last election cycle, we registered 50,000 folks to vote in every single House district in Oregon. So we very much care about nonpartisan voter reg and want to make it as accessible as possible. Right now, the Oregon University system and the community colleges do a lot of what's in this bill on handshakes and on incredible relationships that students and administrators have built over time. We very much appreciate that, but know that with changes in governance form, with changes in the way that our universities function, and knowing that a lot of staff within the university system and community colleges move a lot, it's part of the profession, that we want to make sure to really enshrine what's going on and what's going well within our universities and our community colleges in a statute like this. I'd also like to say that there are some concerns around possible costs associated, but I would say that a large majority of this is done with online work that is updated on a pretty constant basis. And we also will like to mention that the the part about student government and things that student government have access to, they have their own highly restrictive budgeting process, and it's very meticulous. And I would also like to say that the majority of nonpartisan voter reg that's done by our student governments is done by volunteers. And so we don't anticipate there being any considerable cost from this. So this bill is really about increasing voter registration and participation in voter registration across the state in all 60 House districts, like I mentioned. And it's about ensuring that all students can participate in the process, knowing that we are one of the most transient populations in the state of Oregon right now, and students really do want to participate and be civically engaged even when they're moving multiple times a year and finding it difficult to do so. We want to make sure that on-campus voter reg is as quality and as accessible as possible. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair Garrett, members of the committee, Henry Kramer with the Bus Project. We're in favor of House Bill 3175 strongly. Emma made most of the points I'd like to make. The one thing I would like to add is, you know, on Monday we testified on a bill that would have allowed county elections offices to be open at different hours. And part of our gripe with the bill was it would have given different rights to different voters in different areas. Mm-hmm. There's a similar problem with campus voter registration in Oregon right now, that some campuses have greater access for student governments to do voter registration than other ones do. Some campuses have more voter registration links on their pages than other campuses do, which privileges some students in some localities against students in others. And so what we see this bill as is standardizing the access to voter registration, the access to civic engagement for students around the state. Aside from that, thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Ms.
Henry, are you equating access to a website with access to voter registration in such a way that you are exposing us to some sort of a charge that by not having something on a website, we are denying voter access?
Chair Garrett, Representative Berger.
Is that what I heard?
That is not the case. That was not the intent of my communication.
That is what it sounded like to me. I'm pleased that you didn't do that.
Chair Garrett Berger, I apologize for giving that impression.
Thank you.
Simply urging us to standardize access to voter registration as best we can.
Mr. Holliday, please.
Chair Garrett, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joe Holliday. I serve the Oregon University System as Assistant Vice Chancellor for Student Success Initiatives. And Emma also has saved me some time, because I was going to agree with what OSA does to support our campuses and our student governments. We think they do a fantastic job. Secretary of State Brown submitted a report to you last month that I submitted to your committee assistant that commends the Oregon University System for exceeding the requirements of the National Voter Registration Act and of your own and this legislature's Senate Bill 951 in 2007. So we actually feel that we do a robust job of voter registration efforts. Our students, we don't take any credit for it. We just try to assist. We would support some amendments that made this bill less prescriptive and more adaptable to campus environments. In fact, Senate Bill 951 in 2007 did just that. It asked the campuses to work on this with their student governments. We think that's the best approach. In particular, we don't want to place obstacles in front of students who are trying to access financial aid or register for their classes. Some of the aspects of this bill might do that if they were seen as obstacles by students who are already registered, because our student governments have done such a great job of registering students. Most of our students are registered. So we would just like to see more flexibility, less prescriptive wording in the bill, and otherwise we would support it.
Okay. Representative Hicks.
Thank you, for Mr. Holliday. Briefly, Section 5, line 30 says, when an election will occur during academic term, the school shall send a reminder to each of its students on the morning of the voter registration deadline for that election. And who in the school is going to do that? I mean, whose job is it to do that? Have you identified somebody within the school? Who's going to do that?
Rep. Garrett, Rep. Hicks, members of the committee, one of the things that I do in my role is work with the student affairs vice presidents on each campus in the Oregon University System, so I cannot speak for the community colleges here. But in the U.S., I would be working with the student affairs vice presidents who oversee the student affairs functions, and they would certainly delegate it. I can tell you from my own experience, 15 years working at Oregon Tech, and six of those as a vice president for student affairs, that students do not check their email that often. It's not really that effective a way. Campuses are really doing a much better job through social media and other ways of notifying students and interacting with them, but it would be through the Student Affairs Vice President, sir.
Thank you.
And I apologize if I missed this in your testimony, but you said you'd like less prescriptive language in the bill. Do you have proposed language?
Rep. Garrett, members of the committee, we certainly do. I don't have it with me this afternoon, but yes, we do.
Thank you. Representative Berger.
Yes, and if we have an amendment proposed, I would certainly like to hear from the community colleges. There are 17 of them. They all have a different system. The gentleman here speaks for a pretty cogent university system, but there are 17 community colleges that would be affected here, and each have their own systems. So I am concerned the fiscal on this will be greater than I think we can.
Yeah. Okay. Representative Denbrough.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I think I can't speak for the OCCA, but the sense I got from John Wyckoff was they are supportive of this in concept, at least. You know, I do think as we're looking at amendments, the point that Mr. Holliday just made makes sense. That is, we may not want to limit it to email. Social media may actually be a better way to contact people. So to sort of broaden it a little bit, I think makes sense. Generally in my experience, colleges and universities are always sending reminders to students about various things. They're kind of routine. I don't think it would take a lot to add this to the reminder calendar.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I withdraw my.
Okay. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate wanting some flexibility in this. I think the bill is well intended, but I do think from reading it, it seems to be a little overkill to me, perhaps. I have a question specifically about that the school's official student government have the opportunity to provide voter registration services during the first week of classes in each academic term. I'm wondering if anybody can answer, does that mean that in that actual class room for each class and during each term, at the beginning of each term, that there's a presentation taken up during that class time?
Chair Garrett and Representative Holvey, there's an amendment being drafted, that particular section that makes that an option for the professor to choose whether they want to make that available, and I think that that is one of the ways that we can actually lessen some of the prescription. We do know that that's a captive audience, and when professors do want to provide nonpartisan voter registration, it's a very effective way of getting a whole bunch of folks updated at the same time. But I think making it optional for professors, not infringing upon academic freedom or duplicating too many class presentations, would be addressed by that optional factor.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that opportunity to ask that question. I just have some concern that, you know, some students may be, you know, paying for education of a specific subject matter and may already be registered or may not wish to be registered and may, you know, feel that that's sort of an intrusion on their dime, I guess. I'd just like to see a little bit less prescriptive issues, and it just seems like it's a little bit too much, but I like the intent of it.
Representative Jensen.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just for the information of the proponents of the bill, if such an amendment were added to it, I would vote against it.
Okay.
I'm not making a commitment to vote for it the way it is, but the comment that, you know, has been made that, the student in my calculus class probably doesn't have a lot of real demand. He might be much more interested in what else I'm going to be doing, there. And additionally, if you get as lucky as I am on this, I might have to go through six presentations in that first week of school, and that'd probably be just about enough for me to withdraw my registration,
Representative Denbrough.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. You know, as someone who who has sat through endless presentations like this, that this does happen a lot, and it is happening now, Rep. Holvey. You know, I know my campus is, we do this very vigorously. Students, in my experience, don't mind it. They enjoy the interaction with, you know, the person from student government. I mean, you know, to be honest, it's also an opportunity for the student government people to make a little pitch to the students about some of the services that student government does, you know, some of the services that are out there for them to take advantage of. I think that, you know, generally, I mean, those who are most successful are able to do it very quickly.
All right, thank you, panel. We're going to move on, and we're at the end of our last 10 minutes, so we're going to have to move quickly. But Steve Trout and Mike Eliason, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Steve Trout, State Election Director, and again, the Secretary enthusiastically endorses the intent of House Bill 3175. We've got a great system in our online registration system that's secure, more accurate, and easier to use, and anything we can do to provide more opportunities for citizens to use that, we're in favor of. So in the spirit of time, thank you. I'll be happy to answer questions.
Chair Garrett, members of the committee, Mike Eliason with the Association of Oregon Counties here on behalf of the Association of County Clerks, have no objection with the bill whatsoever. Other than to make one sort of friendly suggestion, it's already been brought up, but the last line on the first page of the bill that talks about sending an email out on the day of the registration deadline, it was just suggested from some of the clerks it might make more sense because, as the gentleman earlier brought up, a lot of folks aren't checking their email every day. Send that out maybe the Friday before the registration deadline or at a time a little bit earlier. Other than that, in the interest of time, no comment other than to say we have no problem with the bill.
All right. Thanks for the brief testimony. Any questions? All right. Thank you. Okay, we have four more. Andrew Nesbitt and Patrick Laswell, please.
Andrew Nesbitt, 1710 Southeast Belmont, Portland, Oregon. We just listened to a whole selection of people that have explained to us that student government is registering people hand over fist in vast quantities and with gay abandon. And as a response to this success, we're now going to spend money out of the education budget, apparently, which I wasn't aware was overflowing with funds, to fix a problem that doesn't seem to actually be there. The overly elaborate and marvelous, the following 10 websites will have people coming in and out, seems a bit elaborate to me, but it can be as elaborate or simple as it wants. It's fixing a problem that doesn't exist. And with all due deference to Representative Demblow, I got really tired of repetitive presentations back when I was playing college student. So,
okay,
that's it.
Thank
for
you.
Me.
So, Patrick Boswell, 4625 North Montana in Portland, Oregon. As a son of a college professor, I am more than somewhat concerned about the impact on the power of tenure, which is to say that if a college professor happens to have a stellar website that is viewed by people all over the world, will he then be will this impose upon his choice of content? And if the bus project, how, And a second note, if the bus project wishes to marginalize themselves further by imposing death by PowerPoint on college students, I'm all in favor of it. I just don't think it should be legislated. A resolution would do much the same, and but the extreme detail. And all, one final thing, 20 years ago, virtually no college had 10 web pages, let alone, and in 20 years, we have no idea what will be necessary, and encoding this level of detail into law is folly. Thank you.
All right, any questions for this panel? Thank you both for your testimony. Final witnesses are Sandy Redu and Janice Deisinger, please.
Thank you, Chair Garrett and committee members. I'm Janice Deisinger, Gresham, Oregon. I'm opposed to 3175. I think it's, as everyone else has already said here, it's a very extensive program. I have two comments. One, will it, will the privacy of the students be protected in all of this with the with how they're interacting with the website? And if we're going to be giving the students so much information here, could we just remind them that they need to be a citizen, a resident, and 18 years of age? If that's going, if they're going to be so extensive about everything else they're saying, could they just include the requirements? That's all I had.
Thank you. Ms. Redu.
Sandy Redu, Beaverton, Oregon. Representative Garrett, members of the committee. I'm not in favor of this bill, but because, along with some previous testimony, I agree that this is a little too detailed and a little too comprehensive to be legislated. We send our children to college. We let them register to vote at 17, maybe 16. We've given them all those responsibilities, and now when they're paying good money for tuition in our public universities and colleges, we're hitting them with a commercial of constantly over and over about it. I have no problem with the information being disseminated to them and the opportunity. What I have a problem with is legislating the amount and making it into more of a nanny state in college than it needs to be. The other point I'd like to bring up is, by legislating this in our public universities and colleges, is that not a conflict of interest? By making this a legislative decision to make this available, are we tracking who's registered, who clicks through to register, who doesn't, who signs up in a particular professor's class or who doesn't? The student's perception, not reality, but a student's perception, and are we creating a conflict of interest where there is possibly some perception of coercion? Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? I see none. Thank you all for your testimony. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3175, and there's no further business. Committee's adjourned.